Drive time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. New year, seize the moment. Talk to a financial broker today about a Zurich pension.
You're welcome back. Now we return to the story that has dominated the airwaves this week, the Mother and Baby Homes Report. Records examined by the Commission show that 1,638 children who were resident in homes under investigation were placed for foreign adoption. The vast majority were adopted to the United States. But how were these adoptions arranged and who was involved? I'm joined now by Mary Steed, who's US coordinator for the Adoption Rights Alliance and co-founder of Justice for Magdalene's Research. Mary, you're very welcome to the programme. Now, right throughout the week, there was an awful lot of focus on infant mortality, that element of the report, and how babies were buried without dignity and so on, and rightly so. And there was some analysis of adoptions and illegal adoptions and the role of the state as well. And that's what we're going to particularly focus on here, and particularly adoptions to the United States. It's a huge, huge issue, Mary, isn't it?
Yes, it is, definitely.
And tell us about the process or the processes that were involved in adopting children from here to the United States.
Well, in the early days, pre-1952 Adoption Act, there really was no process. There was no official sanctioning of such adoptions. And in fact, it's interesting to note in the documents of the Department of Foreign Affairs, which have been published through the RIA, there is interesting documentation with the department going back and forth between their desks and, say, their London desks with American servicemen, service families stationed in the UK at that time, post-World War II, and how they're clamoring. They had heard that there were babies available in Ireland, and, they're asking, can we adopt them? And the initial response from the government was, well, no, we can't do that. We have no formal adoption act. But then, you know, a few years later, still prior to the 52 Adoption Act, that tone changes and the requests keep coming, but they're saying, well, sure, we don't have an act. Why not? We'll let the babies be adopted. So there were quite a number of children that were adopted to the U.S. between, let's say, probably the early to mid-1940s and early 1950s that definitely would have predated the Adoption Act.
Mm-hmm.
So I would classify those as illegal.
Mm-hmm.
We can call them informal or de facto, but, you know, they're illegal.
And can you spell it out for people why they were illegal?
Well, again, there was no Adoption Act in Ireland to control inter-country adoption. No bilateral agreement between the United States or Ireland with respect to the vetting of adoptive parents, or how the children would be transported, safeguarded, etc. So nothing on the books to deal with that. So it was very ad hoc and purely arranged by the religious orders directly with the Americans who were interested.
And do you know, Mary, then, or do you have an opinion as to, were there illegal adoptions after the Adoption Act in 1952, I think?
Oh, certainly, yes. We've come across numerous cases, both of children sent to the U.S. as well as kept within Ireland, where their births were falsified. They were listed as the natural-born children of their adoptive parents, so that would be the birth cert that they would get at the GRO if they were even aware, mm-hmm. which many of them, of course, are not, and that's a big issue.
And who would have falsified the birth certs?
There would have been various nursing homes. For example, Mary Keating and the St. Rita's nursing home was notorious. They were in operation from the 50s right up through, I believe, the early 1970s. So that was one big source, and a lot of those would have also been arranged through St. Patrick's Guild. So whether or not St. Patrick's falsified the records, I can't say that with certainty,
mm-hmm.
But certainly I know the St. Rita's, you know, was involved in that. And there would have been private practitioners, providers, other nursing homes that would have been involved doing that as well.
And what criteria was used by whatever agency involved, be it the Catholic Charities or the Homes or the state, to say, yeah, these people from the United States are suitable to adopt a child from Ireland?
Well, frankly, in the early days, again, before the 52 Act and before, you know, the U.S. authorities, well, I should say U.S. Catholic Charities kind of became aware of what was happening, the requirements were very minimal. It was basically your bank balance, you know, did you have sufficient means to care for the child, so a healthy bank account, a letter from your parish priest simply stating that you were Catholics in good standing, and in some latter years, about 1951, 52-ish, when Archbishop McQuaid got involved, he demanded that the children be placed in Catholic homes, raised Catholic, and then also ordered that adoptive parents provide proof that they had not shirked the natural responsibilities of marriage. Those were the exact words.
What does that mean?
And that purely meant that they had to prove, or at least the wife had to prove that, you know, she was not a virgin, that they had had sexual relations
That was a criterium for the adoption of a child.
And that, yes, on up until my adoptive mother herself had to go through that and found it completely odious, and she was furious about it we talked about it. But yeah, that went on right up through 1961 when I was adopted.
I believe Monsignor John O'Grady, who was a priest based in the States, saw this, the lack of vetting in terms of child protection, and took issue with that, did he?
He did, yes. He raised the alarm bells early on. He's was the head of U.S. Catholic Charities from 1920, I believe, up till 1961, and was very concerned over, because he knew these children were coming in, presumably because maybe the adoptive parents had reached out to Catholic Charities branches with questions, or, you know, he became aware through the grapevine.
Yeah.
And he did express great concern, and that's well documented in the foreign affairs documents as well.
Can I ask
and
you?
Didn't really want to be part of it.
So he really tried his best, you could say. Can I ask you one more question? Because as usual, maritime is against us. I want to ask you about the scale of illegal adoptions, in your opinion, and also how much the state would have known about it.
Well, I mean, are you referring strictly to those of us sent to the U.S.?
Yes,
or
sorry,
in
this case, yeah.
The foreign adoptions, I know the number in the report was quoted at something like 1,600 plus. That number is definitely higher because I believe that's leaving out a combination of numbers through the Department of Foreign Affairs of passports issued, as well as about another 256 that would have been organized or recorded by the adoption authority, or formerly the adoption board. So that puts the number at 1,900 plus, which would have been the original figures that were offered by Mike Malott and research based on the National Archive holdings.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that there are more than that. We're finding through Ancestry, the online collections of available manifests to the U.S., as well as naturalization records, that there are children that definitely did not fall under that radar, under the radar of DFA, and merely came in through military transport or other sort of sub-radar modes to American couples. So they are not included on that, in that 1,900 or even 1,600 number.
Well, I think you have raised very clearly a huge number of questions that I don't know if they've been addressed properly in the report that was published this week, but we'll have another chance to go through it again, because we won't be leaving this issue as we are now. But Mary Seed, for the moment, US Coordinator for Adoption Rights Alliance and co-founder of Justice for Magdalene's Research, thank you very much for joining us.